Ask not what the World Economic Forum can do for you, but what you can do for the World Economic Forum.
So looking into Davos 2024, the 54th annual WEF Summit meeting and their very telling theme, rebuilding trust. I mean, astounding, right?
We must rebuild trust, and that's actually the theme of our meeting. We have to rebuild trust.
Can you rebuild what just isn't there and never was? I mean, at first glance, it's truly laughable, contemptible, outrageous, creepy how out of touch they seem to be, creepy how arrogant they seem to remain in spite of everything.
When did the word expert become almost an insult?
When the real agenda is just the same old, and there's no reason to, quote, trust it. And so as tempting as that theme is to just throw back in the face of Klaus Schwab, that people don't trust WEF or their agenda, that they reject it, that they're protesting it, it's naive to pretend that that's just all that rebuilding trust is really about, or that it's as simple as the most straightforward of definitions, a firm belief in integrity, ability, character, the condition of having confidence placed in one, one in which confidence is placed, the opposite of having violated a public trust. These are the first definitions that pull up online. And yeah, there's been a colossal failure there, rebuilding trust. As the Telegraph succinctly said in its headline, the global super rich want to rebuild trust. Good luck with that. There's the AP connecting the WEF's big artistic wall with all these slogans and words centered around rebuilding trust. It was full of buzzwords that they pointed out. People said smacked of, quote, empty talk. Critics say the annual meeting are the preserve of business chieftains who covet greater wealth and politicians who want to stay in power. As Alex Clement of G-Zero reminds us, trust, as we keep hearing, is broken. Only 16% of Americans trust their government, down 60 points from peak trust in the mid-1960s. Fewer than a third of Americans trust each other. Meanwhile, half of Americans say the media deliberately misleads them, and fewer than a quarter say journalists have society's interest at heart. Trust is a big issue society-wide, but especially with the elites that are epitomized at this point by WEF. And yet, in spite of all this, at this rebuilding trust meeting, the World Economic Forum and their 2024 Global Risk Assessment Report identified misinformation and disinformation as the number one most severe global risk over the next 2 years. Above climate crises, above wars, above economic issues, everything. Misinformation and disinformation, still these terrible talking points.
Disinformation makes money, and that's one of the, we need to follow that money, and we need to work with the, and particularly the global advertising industry, that a lot of those dollars go to pretty bad content. And so you can work really hard on exclusion lists or inclusion lists to sort of really try to focus ad dollars and challenge the global advertising industry all around the world to focus their ad dollars towards the good news and information, the accurate and relevant news and information.
And with this in mind, Reuters pointed out all the mistrust going on by so many different players, different countries, different parts of the world, different sectors of societies, and yet all of them have in common a pushback against technology. They wrote in part, the highest level of mistrust about the management of innovation was in the United States. The report said examples of pushback against technology included Beijing dropping out of COVID vaccine mandates after online pushback, U.S. Republican positions against electric vehicles, and Hollywood's writer's battle against the use of artificial intelligence in writing scripts, because it's also just pathetic. Resistance to innovation is political, the survey said. Be that as it may, the underlying factor is a distrust in technology as the power of our society. Presumably, the WEF elites and their quest for domination don't want more pushback, so therefore it makes sense to rebuild trust. But even they know that's not going to easily happen. They invited people this year. Not only did the Heritage president, Kevin Roberts, go there, but he said some very pointed things.
One thing that Davos, you might say, and the people come here stand up for is liberal democracy.
It's laughable that you would, or anyone would, describe Davos as protecting liberal democracy.
Kevin Roberts wrote in part, the infamous, hypocritical, self-avowed Marxists, private jet environmentalists, and genocide-adjacent humanitarians want to hear from the Heritage Foundation how they can rebuild trust with everyday Americans against whom they have weaponized their institutions, with an institution that everyday Americans perceive as hostile. Good luck rebuilding trust from that. In my view, this is part of the game. I don't think they're concerned about everyday Americans viewing them as hostile. When you really dig into it, their supposed agenda of trust really amounts to putting it back onto the users, onto dissenters, onto online speech, as though that is the problem. That's why they've centered on misinformation and disinformation as being the biggest risk in the very year that they look to rebuild trust. An unelected, unaccountable global elite who parade annually on stage at their global forum that appears to impose or at least cheerlead some collectivizing, controlling, centralizing, freedom-destroying, constitution-circumventing policies that benefit primarily an already powerful and extremely wealthy corporate elite and their most subservient political figureheads. They mostly don't care what we think. So how can they really be looking to rebuild trust on that level? They primarily just need enough trust and consensus to roll this new phase forward without obstacles before there's no turning back.
The good news is the elites across the world trust each other more and more. So we can come together and design and do beautiful things together. The bad news is that in every single country they were polling, the majority of people trusted that elite less. So we can lead, but if people aren't following, we're not going to get to where we want to go.
But on another level, Klaus Schwab's speech strongly suggests a different definition of trust altogether. Reading the words of Klaus Schwab, listening to the words that he spoke, comes off much more like that of a trust of a foundation, of an estate or an asset that's entrusted, given over for management. Or perhaps it speaks to yet another definition of trust, that of an organization formed explicitly for the purpose of regulating the supply and price of commodities, such as a sugar trust, etc. A combination, a secretive, cum conspiratorial board profiting off of artificially manipulated economies. Is that what this is about? Our future, the direction of our shared earth, our rights and political systems upon it, being held as a property in trust is held. Is that what this is really about?
To break this cycle, we need a paradigm shift. We must rebuild trust, and that's actually the theme of our meeting. We have to rebuild trust. Trust in our future.
Our future.
What does he mean? To whom and to what exactly is he referring?
Trust is not just a feeling. Trust is a commitment to action, to belief, to hope. To achieve this, we must rediscover and embrace the narrative that has driven humanity since its inception, acting as trustees for a better future.
Did you hear that?
Acting as trustees for a better future.
He says,
this narrative isn't about short-term gains or individual successes. It is about stewardship. To rebuild trust, there is a fundamental need to embody trusteeship, which means to care for the greater good.
The greater good.
Let's use this annual meeting to rebuild trust by exercising our trusteeship individually and collectively.
Exercising our trusteeship.
For safeguarding the future of humanity and nature. Thank you.
This interpretation of a trusteeship, a stewardship, a combination trust recalls very much the 1992 UNCED conference and the video about it done by George Hunt.
This is the logo of the Earth Summit. This is not a dove in their Earth Summit logo. It is a hand.
The United Nations Conference on Environmental Development, whose motto and logo was In Our Hands.
In whose hands? Who is the we in this motto?
Literally showing the concept of in their hands, a global worldwide environmental trust, one that is managed by banking interest and other management interest, in the name of tackling, quote, truly global systemic problems, problems that they have determined can only be, quote, solved through a big enough net with a scale too big to control through mere democratic energies, right? Just as Schwab said this year in 2024.
The concept of trust and trusteeship compels us to think beyond borders and beyond our lifetimes.
That's a jurisdictional boundary outside of nation states and traditional rights, which is very troubling because they're not defined. There's very little restrictions in what they could do there with their trust. If you think it through, there's a real problem there for us little people, for the individuals, for our personal lives, and especially for our rights in the scheme of this whole thing that's become our lives with these people in the mix. That a word like trust is being used so pointedly, yet deceptively, with its own hidden agenda, just the usage of the word trust, and everyone, in a sense, trusting that rebuilding trust has just a surface-level meaning, is itself kind of upsetting, honestly.
We must rebuild trust, and that's actually the theme of our meeting. We have to rebuild trust. Trust, acting as trustees. The concept of trust and trusteeship, as trustees of the future, trust as trustees.
So there's one line that I just wanted to talk to you guys about just for a second, because it really bothers me that Klaus Schwab is sitting up there on his blue stage opening the 2024 Davos Forum with,
"To achieve this, we must rediscover and embrace the narrative that has driven humanity since its inception, acting as trustees for a better future."
So who named them trustees? Who created this trust, and what assets are in it, and who is the grantor of that? Well, luckily, you don't have to ask any of those questions or define any of those words, because he says this is the narrative they're embracing and that they will be acting as trustees.
Acting as trustees.
Which basically means it's all made up and they name themselves trustees and they're just going to act like that. So they're actors.
Acting.
I mean, this is their shindig that he charges a bunch of money for. People come listen to them. They could say they're the magical wizard pope of the 17th dimension. It really doesn't matter if it means anything or not. I mean, it's their show.
$43 hot dog, buy a ticket for $19,000. You must be a member of the Economic Forum, which costs a mere $52,000. And remember, that's only if you're invited. So now you're out $71,000. VIPs prefer a private chalet, and for that, $140,000 for the week. You want a wingman or woman, which WEF calls industry partner. With the add-on, we're now over $250,000. A chauffeur-driven Mercedes for the week, actually a bargain at $10,000. The private jet. More than 1,000 of those flew into the environmentally focused conference this week. And if you don't own your own jet, $70,000 round trip.
So if they're acting as trustees, then they're actors, and they're embracing a narrative, which is a story that they basically made up. They could tell themselves whatever they want and embrace whatever narrative they want. Doesn't mean that narrative is actually true, however.
Embrace the narrative.
So now the people at WEF have decided to tell themselves the story that they're trustees acting for a better future. But what's really creepy about it is that he says this is the narrative that has driven humanity since its inception. And they are right about that. Because throughout time immemorial, you know, priest classes and popes and kings and corrupt dictators and tyrannical governments have all said that what they're doing is for the greater good and that it's for a better future to justify all manner of horrible, awful thing that whatever they wanted to do at any given time, ever. And he's right about that. That is always what has happened. So he's just continuing a long tradition of corrupt power structures, taking authority that is not legitimate, taking power that is not legitimate. That's essentially what they're doing. And now, no matter what they do, they can put it on a list and say, well, it's for the greater good.
One ubiquitous type of ID, and certainly that it was digital, and certainly that it was biometric.
Individual carbon footprint tracker.
A globally coordinated system of carbon taxes.
We're trustees for a better future, so anything we want to do in our agenda that benefits us and our stakeholders, that's for the greater good, too, and it's for a better future, and we'll just slap that on the list. I mean, it doesn't make it true, though. That's the thing. It doesn't make it true. And so, essentially, it's just bullshit.
In conclusion, trust, embody trusteeship to rebuild trust. By exercising our trusteeship. Thank you.
Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, dear Klaus.
Importantly, by identifying disinformation and misinformation as the single biggest planetary risk this year, the same year that they set, quote, rebuilding trust as their main agenda point, they're shifting the blame and putting the burden on the rest of us, not on the reasons that common people don't trust this unelected, unaccountable para-government that has the audacity to go on stage and say these things, but to the trust of, are these common people engaging in disinformation and misinformation, and how do we know who they are, and how do we know what they're doing, and how do we regulate what they're saying and doing? That's really what this gets into. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen.
Your annual global risk report makes for a stunning and sobering read. For the global business community, the top concern for the next 2 years is not conflict or climate. It is disinformation and misinformation.
Is full of rebels.
And of course, during the last few years, in the name of disinformation and misinformation, many of us online have seen our ability to be heard greatly diminished, if not restricted and banned altogether. Von der Leyen hit this language pretty hard in her speech.
For example, with disinformation and misinformation. And nowhere has there been more of that than on the issue of Ukraine.
But is it not they who smelt it that dealt it? She said in part,
rebuilding trust. This is not a time for conflicts or polarization. This is a time to build trust.
I mean, is this just all utter BS and word salad, or is this leading to something important? She said in part,
business have the innovation, the technology, the talents to deliver the solutions we need. To fight threats like climate change or industrial-scale disinformation.
The business solutions and the technology around the algorithms stymie dissidents and a brackish backwater pool of the internet. I mean, I don't know, maybe that's just because those are things that we've actually experienced in the last couple of years and I'm still kind of bitter about it.
Disinformation and misinformation. Disinformation and misinformation. Industrial-scale disinformation. For example, with disinformation and misinformation.
Industrial scale disinformation, by which they don't actually mean industrial scale, they actually just mean individual common people with whom they want to rebuild trust, who they also want to suppress into non-existence. Sorry, nothing two-faced going on here at all. Von der Leyen says,
because our democracies and our businesses have interests that align, creating equal opportunity and freedom.
I mean, how this kind of utter nonsense can be uttered and yet trust be demanded, I don't know.
And there is no doubt that we face the greatest risk to the global order in the post-war era. But in order to face risks, we have to take risks.
So clearly, disinfo, misinfo, catch-all buzzwords, whatever problem children they might want to deal with, totally vague, borderline meaningless.
It has never been more important for the public and private sector to create new connective tissue.
The EU issued another report on disinformation. It was timed with the 2024 WEF conference, and it addresses the reduced trust in public institutions, the spread of false stories, harassment allegedly going on online, and the sowing of hatred against nations and groups of people. And by groups of people, they probably pretty much mean themselves.
Ladies and gentlemen, dear Klaus.
Listen to the way that the European Commission Vice President Josep Borrell talks about us, the people, the little ones. As The Guardian writes, in part, this new warfare, quote-unquote, does not involve bombs that kill you, but words and ideas that colonize you. So, you've got mouthpieces for one of the most elite organizations on the planet lecturing other people about words and ideas that, quote, colonize you. That's the new warfare. It's everyone else. It's not the things going on there. Without irony, this report states the goal is not only to shape the global narratives, but also to suppress and silence dissenting voices. They're supposedly not talking about themselves. It's those that are doing the disinfo, not those that are censoring the dissenting voices. Yeah. Are you keeping track of that? And Borrell also apparently said, keep in mind that unchecked malicious content spreads like a cancer and puts the health of the democracy at risk. But we have the tools to fight against this. So they have the tools to check the spread of malicious content. The viewpoints of dissenters online, that's not the democracy. It's the elite people with the tools to suppress the speech. They're the ones protecting the democracy, and the democracy exists in some bubble somewhere. I don't know.
Because the boundary between online and offline is getting thinner and thinner.
When you really think about what's being said here, what we're talking about is an overwide net that has been cast over the smaller voices and is discriminating against many individuals in the name of so-called democracy.
The next years will require us to think in the same way.
Is WEF really talking about, even theoretically, restoring trust, quote-unquote, of their brand with the people?
If you go back really not that long ago, as I say, we owned the news. We were the gatekeepers, and we very much owned the facts as well. If it said it in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, then that was a fact. Nowadays, people can go to all sorts of different sources for the news, and they're much more questioning about what we're saying.
Or is it, as I've suggested, a lot more like blame shifting to use disinfo to distrust dissenting voices among the common people and put the burden on them and the supposedly horrible things they say and not on the system that's done so much harm to so many people, has usurped so many rights, and really set out a forward-thinking, organized agenda to destroy freedom of speech, and to undermine dissent on the internet?
The next years will require us to think in the same way. Thank you very much.
With that said, if you look at the coded language and the buzzwords, it's clear that, quote, trust has a very particular meaning with respect to the unveiling and implementation of artificial intelligence.
You know, we're going to have digital doctors. Digital people. You know, these digital people are going to emerge, and there's going to have to be a level of trust.
So let's focus on that specifically and its growing potentials to control and dominate society. So what does trust have to do with AI? The rub of that agenda is coming out in the next phase here. So CNBC says, in part, among the big names from the business world, many will undoubtedly be keen to hear from Sam Altman, reinstalled CEO of ChatGPT maker OpenAI, who's scheduled to discuss safety and trust in technology.
I have a lot of empathy for the general nervousness and discomfort of the world towards companies like us and, you know, our the other people doing similar things, which is like, why is our future in their hands? Why is our future in their hands?
Meanwhile, I think at the same forum, Microsoft CEO Nadella, also speaking on AI and ChatGPT and OpenAI.
We have to take the unintended consequences of any new technology. Along with all the benefits, I feel like our license to operate as an industry depends on that, because I don't think the world will put up anymore with any of us coming up with something that has not thought through safety, trust, equity. And this, by the way, is not new for many other industries, but it is a little new for the tech industry.
And it does speak to the public anger and the acceptance of technology in the general public. It also has to do with the nitty-gritty, boring, less interesting way that the law is shaping around the technology online. So I come back around to the other part of Ursula von der Leyen's 2024 WEF speech, the one where she expressly greets not only the general ladies and gentlemen of the crowd, but her, quote, dear Klaus.
Dear Klaus. Dear Klaus.
I mean, maybe they should get a room. So in the meat of Ursula's talk, which surely did get a rise out of Dear Klaus, was what amounts to a nightmare of restricted content and de-amplification online.
To rebuild trust.
These are real-life consequences that many of us have personally felt and enabled and accelerated by these new EU regulations.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dear Klaus, let me go back to the number one concern of the Global Risk Report. Disinformation and misinformation. Tackling this has been our focus since the very beginning of my mandate. With our Digital Services Act, we defined the responsibilities of large internet platforms on the content they promote and propagate, a responsible to children and vulnerable groups targeted by hate speech. And this is even more important in this new era of generative AI.
The Digital Services Act, which I think was finalized in, 2020? It regulates disinformation on the major social media and tech platforms. And just recently, here in the last month or so, they filed a complaint and opened proceedings against X, formerly Twitter, the platform just publicly revamped and revised through Elon Musk's purchase and subsequent focus on restoring free speech, at least that's what he talked about, whatever he really does, that was being suppressed by Twitter employees and who were caught coordinating with the FBI, Homeland Security, members of the White House staff to remove or render invisible individual posts and content creators. The CSIS website wrote, quote, unapologetically, commission officials have been clear that their overarching regulatory goal is to limit market power held by LOPs, that's the large online platforms, acting as, quote, gatekeepers. Gatekeepers being a term that the commission has yet to define. Quote, we've come to a point where we have to take action, a point where the power of digital businesses, especially the biggest gatekeepers, threatens our freedoms, our opportunities, even our democracy. Basically, gatekeeping the gatekeepers. Yeah, they use that word. And this legislation, this policy, is now gatekeeping the internet. The European Commission, under the DSA, say, quote, we will now start an in-depth investigation of X's compliance with the DSA obligations concerning countering the dissemination and amplification of illegal content and disinformation in the EU. And so the chilling effect on dissent is quite clear, doubling down on disinformation and misinformation. Number one problem, they say. There's not other problems. It's not a lot of people economically hurting who can't pay rent or afford to buy groceries. I mean, that's what happened this year, 2024. But I browsed the documents for the public consultation on the AI white paper, because whenever these policies claim to be after a mission of making sure AI is trustworthy, they have to do this little checkboxing thing. Let's make sure we have everyone's trust and consent here. Let's checkbox it. And they consult with the public. They want to, quote, promote an ecosystem of excellence and trust for AI. There's that word trust. An overwhelming majority of people strongly supported the need for new legislation. So that's a mandate. You could bet they're going to have that new legislation. But what's really going to be in there? What's the real camel's nose under the tent here? The big sell here is that, quote, the Artificial Intelligence Act builds trust by looking at high-risk cases like a real-time remote biometric identification, biometric mass surveillance. They use that term multiple times in this document. They're talking about identification of individuals out of a mass of people and from a distance, including facial recognition biometrics, the gait of a person's walk biometrics, and biometrics identifying voices. ranking people based on their personal characteristics, social economic status, or behavior, which is basically a social credit score. That, according to this document, would also be unacceptable. And of course, we could all celebrate that. Good. The worst of it is done away with. So, though this is proposed, they're expecting it to take effect relatively soon. And theoretically, this would ban unacceptable risk categories. All the other things that are in the minimal risk category or the general AI category would pretty much be accepted and put into use. Furthermore, individual states in the EU would be prevented from further regulating general use artificial intelligence under the doctrine of maximum harmonization. So the worst things supposedly are going to be banned, but everything else they have to just accept their use, and there it goes. That's dangerous too. This is going to be a total wild card with artificial intelligence, which very clearly they're intent on unleashing here. So we'll see what we get out of it. And so here are some comments from Joe McNamee, who ironically is the senior policy expert for the EU Disinfo Lab, warning against the problems of mass biometric surveillance in artificial intelligence systems. He says in part, "The purpose of this article is to explain the decision-making process for the AI Act and how it risks leading to the rollout of AI-powered biometric mass surveillance. Didn't I see headlines about the EU voting to ban biometric mass surveillance only a few weeks ago?" he writes. You did, except it wasn't the EU. It was a committee vote in the European Parliament. Exceptionally, this was confirmed by a full vote of the Parliament. This vote launches the beginning of a secret closed-door negotiation with two other EU institutions, the Council and the Commission. Not the end of negotiations, the beginning. He goes on to say later in the article, "So the compromise will be that the biometric mass surveillance will be allowed subject to unenforceable safeguards. These are the policies to reinsure trust that will allow biometric mass surveillance, but with certain safeguards to give the public the reassurance to restore trust." He writes, "So the EP could literally ban in public and then accept it in private and get away with it?" Yes, he writes, "The European Parliament will be able to both gain plaudits for banning human rights eroding biometric mass surveillance and not be held accountable for causing its rollout in the EU and across the globe." And that system, by definition, will track human beings because the people who run that system don't trust people.
Trust, trust, trust.
But they want those people to trust that that system is being held accountable and watched by humans to a system that wants to restore trust in the sense of holding the world and its people as an asset held in trust, as a corporation to be run by managers, as stewards of our lives.
Elites, yeah.
Elites and fictionists are like bullshit.
Bullshit, okay.
Ask not what the World Economic Forum can do for you, but what you can do for the World Economic Forum. Now, what do I mean by that? The purpose of the forum is to inspire people. Hopefully, when you go back to your country, you'll educate yourself about some of the things that we talked about here that you might be inspired to learn more about, and try to pick one issue of the ones we talked about where you make yourself not only well-educated about it, better educated than now, but try to make some difference in your own country to try to bring some forward some of these ideas. Because the only way we're really going to be effective, the World Economic Forum, is we have people that come to the sessions, and those people are watching on streaming, they are going to take these ideas and do something useful with them by working in their own countries to kind of educate people about these things. And that's what I really hope all of you will do.
When I mention our names like Mrs. Merkel, even Vladimir Putin and so on, they all have been young global leaders of the World Economic Forum. What we are very proud of now, the young generation like Prime Minister Trudeau, President of Argentina and so on, that we penetrate the cabinets.
That we penetrate the cabinets.
So yesterday I was at a reception for Prime Minister Trudeau, and I know that half of this cabinet, or even more, half of this cabinet, are actually young global leaders of the World Economic Forum.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sorry. That's true in Argentina as well.
It's true in Argentina, and it's true in France now.
take something away from this session and say, I am now inspired to learn more about this issue or that issue, and I'm going to try to do something in my country to make it more likely that that will happen.
And if I may, I will be candid and say that the agenda that every single member of the administration needs to have is to compile a list of everything that's ever been proposed at the World Economic Forum and object all of them wholesale.
I would like to solve the puzzle.